and Saran done while Kirilla is in office. So all these factors have come together. And we have to remember that's happening under, again, a President Donald Trump, who, as one expert told me, looks at stars and badges, and he can't say no, right? He hero worships the military. He sees it as a kind of expression of masculinity, of strength, of all these dynamics he's obsessed with. So is Donald Trump really going to tell a general, even one who, you know, necessarily, Kirilla is not necessarily, Tucker Carlson's talked about warmongers. I think Kirilla and other military leaders would say we're very much thinking about the U.S.'s best interests, but military leaders are battlefield leaders. They are not necessarily strategists for long-term stability, nor are they politicians who can win public support. When the American public has shown they are very war-wary, and when it's not clear how a U.S.-Israeli strike would lead to a better strategic long-term picture instead of unpredictable chaos and violence, do we really want a military leader to be the most influential voice in Trump's ear? That's where we are right now with General Kirilla.
And Akbar, I wanted to ask you, the Israeli government, the officials have kept claiming that they're not interested in regime change in Iran. But yet this week, the Jerusalem Post has an article about the eldest son of the late Shah of Iran, Reza Pahlavi, talking about how he has a 100-day transition plan and that he will soon be back in Iran. Your thoughts on how the impact of this kind of news on the Iranian people?
It's impossible to separate headlines like that from the last 22 years of U.S. foreign policy in the region, right? People hear that and they think about regime change in Iraq, which led to chaos and the rise of ISIS. They hear that, they think about Libya, which again, chaotic, horrible human trafficking situation. So I think the way that this is resonating for Iranians, I imagine, and also certainly for Americans and audiences around the world is this is just so fantastical, right? And Israeli officials, to your point, have said two things at once. They have said, we're not pursuing regime change. Our goal is to limit Iran's nuclear development. But we've also seen Israeli officials across the board, importantly, not just Netanyahu, but the leading opposition figures, political rivals of Netanyahu, really senior Israeli political figures have come out and said, you know, we're not necessarily doing regime change, but Iranian people, don't you think this is a great time to have a revolution? You know, and I think that kind of, there's a lot in there that's concerning, right? I think for Iranian activists who have been raising their voices and been really viciously repressed for it, they feel that their message, their calls for reform are being hijacked in a way by Netanyahu, who is deeply unpopular there. And I just think it's very unlikely to work, right? There's not there's not an indication throughout history, and certainly not in recent Middle Eastern history, that suggests local communities under bombing are going to say, absolutely, the people bombing us are the liberators. This is who we want to stand with. With regard to Reza Pahlavi and this idea of restoring the monarchy in Iran, Pahlavi lives here in D.C. He's very much a fixture in kind of hawkish circles, close to people here. But the kind of magical thinking that you're seeing among D.C. policymakers, where they believe that someone who's been out of Iran since 1979 is going to go in and understand the modern country where most people are young, where most people have not ever lived under Shah, it's just remarkable and stunning, right? And you mentioned earlier in the show these congressional efforts that Senator Kaine is leading, some legislators in the House are leading. And I do think there's a significant number of Democrats who are willing to stand up and question whether another clear attempt at regime change or certainly a risk of mission creep is worth it. But you aren't seeing Republicans sign on. Only one Republican member of Congress so far has joined those resolutions. And that tells us a lot about the disconnect between the really, again, magical thinking, hawkish thinking in decision-making and policy circles here in Washington and people in America, people in Iran, people around the world.
Akbar Ashahed Ahmed, we want to thank you for being with us, senior diplomatic correspondent for HuffPost. His recent pieces will link to at democracynow.org. Israel's war in Iran bears the echo of past American mistakes. And the pro-Israel U.S. general quietly influencing Trump on Iran. Speaking to us from D.C., Mohammed Brandi, thank you as well, professor of English literature and Orientalism at the University of Tehran, part of the nuclear deal negotiations of 2015. When we come back, what's happening in Gaza as the world's attention turns to Iran. Then we'll be joined by New York City Comptroller Brad Lander, arrested by ICE yesterday as he tried to protect an immigrant in court. Stay with us. Democracy Now! Studio yesterday. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We turn now to Gaza, where the death toll from an Israeli attack on aid seekers in Khan Yunis Tuesday has reached 70. Hundreds of Palestinians were also wounded. Israeli forces attacked using tanks, drones, machine guns, and crowds gathered hoping to receive bags of flour. A spokesperson for the Gaza Civil Defense said, quote, Israeli drones fired at the citizens. Some minutes later, Israeli tanks fired several shells at the citizens, which led to a large number of martyrs and wounded, unquote. This is Dr. Mark Brunner, a doctor from Oregon who's volunteering at the Nasser Hospital.
Every time we know that there's a few so-called food distribution, we know that there's going to be annihilation. And, you know, the first couple of days, we were seeing a lot of isolated injuries, head or chest or abdomen. But today, it's reported that tanks have been used at the food distribution centers, which makes sense because we're seeing multi-trauma. We're seeing head, neck, chest, abdomen, extremities, many, many deaths. And it just doesn't have to be this way. You know, this is something that's just got to stop.
This comes as a group of UN experts in Geneva told the UN Human Rights Council Israel's committing war crimes and the crime against humanity of extermination. For more, we're joined by the Pulitzer Prize-winning poet, the Palestinian author Masab Abu Toha. His latest piece is headlined, What Gaza Needs Now, in the New Yorker magazine. Masab joins us from Syracuse, New York, where he has moved from Gaza with his family. Masab, welcome back to Democracy Now! Your latest piece is devastating. You write, my family is starving. My neighbors are dying. I'm compelled to share these injustices because they need to stop. Tell us about your constant conversations with people in Gaza, some soon after die, and what you're calling for now.
Thank you so much, Amy, for having me again. Thank you so much, Democracy Now!, for amplifying the stories that do not unfortunately get to be heard by mainstream media. As I said in my piece, the aim of writing these stories and sharing them with the outside world, because, you know, there was a full internet blackout for the past few days. It was fixed, and now it's again, it's not working. So the hope of sharing the news and sharing stories is that these stories will not happen again and again. And just a few hours after I published the piece, there was another massacre of aid seekers, whether in North Gaza or in the middle of the Gaza Strip or in Rafah. If we're going to talk about, you know, the trouble of or the risk of going to get aid, yesterday there was a massacre, a huge massacre on the Rashid Street on the beach of Gaza City. More than 60 people were killed while trying to get aid from the trucks that were entering from Israel. These 60s were just part of the 100 people who were killed on yesterday. This morning, I want to tell you what happened today, local time in Gaza, after 3 a.m. Now in Gaza, it is at 4 or 3 a.m. So since 3 a.m., Israel bombed a tent in Khan Yunis at 3 a.m. Five people were killed. Three of them were from one same family, a father and his two children. And then there were early reports that Israel was targeting Palestinians who were seeking aid near the Netzarim distribution. They call it distribution site. 11 people were killed. These are confirmed people who were killed, and 70 people were wounded. And then there was an airstrike on a tent in Khan Yunis, in Mawasi Khan Yunis, so-called humanitarian zone or non-combat zone. Six people were killed. And then there was another airstrike, and this is devastating. We just got the names. There was an airstrike on a house in Al Zaytun neighborhood in Gaza City. Eight people were killed. Of them, there were seven children. And I just posted their names, if you allow me to read the names of these kids. Their names are Zaid, Bisan, Muhammad, Asil, Sama, Lama, Saad. So these are seven kids from Mansour family who were killed today morning at 3 a.m. local time. And then as we were talking, there are reports that three people were killed near the aid site in Rafah. And just an hour ago, three people were killed near the Ahli Baptist Hospital in Gaza City, close to the Shurafa roundabout. So I just read to you the news of what has been happening in Gaza in the past, less than 12 hours, in the past 12 hours. So people continue to starve, and there are lots of lying that I hear on the news, that Israel distributed, or this so-called humanitarian foundation, distributed 13 million meals. These are big lies. What meals? I mean, my family in Gaza, they have never received any meal. My wife's family never received any meals. I don't know where they bring these numbers. I don't know how they come up with these numbers. But these are not true at all. People have to go to the so-called distribution site. And they know they will be killed. And many people, when I post the videos or news of people getting killed while trying to get aid, they tell me, Mus'ab, tell them not to go. It's like, you know what? It's like, you know, when COVID hit and people knew that there is a dangerous virus, and as if you're asking, no, don't go out, don't go to buy things, don't go shopping, don't go visit, don't go to the hospital because there is COVID outside. People will not stop going out to get food for themselves and for their children, even though they know first they will be killed, and they know that they will not necessarily get fooded because it's very, very small amount of food that is getting in.
And Mossab, I wanted to ask you also the fear that among Palestinians that now that Israel has launched this war on Iran, that the rest of the world will shift its focus and forget about what is happening in Gaza, and that some people believe that this is precisely part of the plan of Netanyahu because Israel has been so discredited internationally by its attacks in Gaza. Your sense, are the Palestinians being forgotten at this moment?
You know what? I mean, first of all, people thought that, unfortunately, when Israel attacked Iran during the night, people thought that in some way that the focus of the Israeli airstrikes would be less because they are going to move their troops or move their F-16, their death warplanes somewhere else, although we don't wish anyone else in the world to be killed, right? So people thought that this would result in less pressure, less death in Gaza. But this is not what we have seen. Unfortunately, this is not a war in Gaza. It's a genocide that is happening while Israel is targeting everything, people seeking aid, people who are trying to get to the hospital, and people who do not find medicine to heal, do not have healthy food to heal. So people thought that this in some way would change the focus of this Israeli genocide somewhere else without necessarily resulting in the death of so many people in other places. But what we are watching right now is that Israel intensified its airstrikes. Yesterday, they killed about more than 100 people, 60 of them, as I mentioned, while seeking aid in Beit Lahia, in Rafah, in Nusayrat, middle of Gaza. And today morning, just in the past 12 hours, Israel killed more than 40 people. So it's not like people in Gaza want people to to move its killing machine somewhere else. But Israel is not letting anyone survive, not in Gaza, not in Iran, not in Syria, not in Lebanon. They continue to kill in so many places, and they say, oh, we are attacked by so many people, and everyone wants us to disappear from the map, as if they are not disappearing, us Palestinians in Gaza. If you look at the what they call evacuation orders or evacuation warnings, yesterday, 5 days ago, they posted a general photo map of Gaza, and they marked the areas that are called combat zones in red. And it was about 70% of the Gaza Strip. One day after that, they added one more square of red into the map. So they expanded their so-called combat zone. Yesterday, they added more red areas, which means that this area should be evacuated. And so Israel is expanding their combat zone, which is one way or another, they are occupying this area militarily. And the more dangerous thing is not that they are marking these areas as combat zones. They are telling everyone, and this is in Arabic, they say, returning to this area would put your life at risk. So they are telling people that, okay, we are gonna tell you that this area is combat zone, and you are not allowed to return to it. They don't tell you that, okay, this is a combat zone for a month, for a week, for 2 weeks, or for a year. No, it is indefinitely a combat zone. If you go back there and we ask them, oh, why did you kill this guy? They say, oh, he returned to a combat zone. Even though this guy or that family returned not to live because there's no life there.
We have 30 seconds.
They just wanted to return to find something that they left because they couldn't carry everything, whether it's clothes, whether it's shoes, whether it's... I don't know. This is devastating. Israel is committing these war crimes live, and we are posting about them. We are publishing the names of these children who are killed, and no one cares.
Musab Abu Toha, Pulitzer Prize-winning Palestinian poet and author, will link to your piece in The New Yorker, What Gaza Needs Now. My family is starving. My neighbors are dying. I'm compelled to share these injustices because they need to stop. When we come back, another public official has been arrested by ICE. We'll speak to New York City Comptroller Brad Lander. Stay with us.
Jano jo na pucho jati Jano jo na pucho jati Aage jata na hai
by Sunny Singh, performing in our Democracy Now! Studio yesterday. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. ICE agents arrested the New York City comptroller, Brad Lander, yesterday as he was escorting a family out of immigration court in Lower Manhattan. Lander is running for mayor. He was handcuffed and detained by masked agents after he demanded to see a judicial warrant from agents trying to detain the man he was accompanying.
You have a judicial warrant. You have a judicial warrant.
Had I seen the judicial warrant? Had I seen the warrant? I will let go when you show me the judicial warrant. Where is it?
You don't have authority to arrest U.S. citizens.
Sir,
you don't have the authority to arrest U.S. citizens.
Please stay back.
I'm not obstructing. I'm standing right here in the hallway. I asked to see the judicial warrant. By asking for a judicial warrant? You don't have the authority to arrest U.S. citizens asking for a judicial warrant.
Stay back.
No, ma'am, for your own safety.
I can't believe you're arresting me.
Where are you taking him? Hello?
Hi, I'm...
You have no authority to arrest U.S. citizens. Where are you taking me? And with what authority?
City Controller Brad Lander was held for several hours before being released when the New York governor came down to demand this. She had said what had happened was bull, and she used the whole thing. He exited the courthouse building accompanied by his wife, as well as Governor Kathy Hochul. He spoke to supporters gathered outside the arrest and the man he was attempting to escort, who he named Edgardo.
I certainly did not assault an officer. I engaged anyway. But I guess I just think here's the thing. Like, I know I will have due process and I will have a good lawyer and my rights will be protected. But Edgardo has no due process rights and no lawyer and is going to sleep tonight in God knows where in an ICE detention facility. My goal was to walk Edgardo out of the building. I can't tell you the bit of, like, we got to walk one family out today. And that's this family of four that's back at home. And nothing would have made me happier to be able to get in that elevator and let Edgardo go about his business. That was what I came to do, and it is all I want.
For more, we're joined in studio by the controller of the city of New York, Brad Lander. Welcome back to Democracy Now! Interviewed you when you were at a protest calling for the release of Mohsen Mahdawi, Columbia student who was arrested in Vermont. Talk about what happened yesterday.
Yeah. I've been going down to immigration court now for the last 3 weeks since Department of Homeland Security made this change and started basically stripping people of their status. It's called dismissing their cases, which sounds good, except as soon as it happens, you're subject to expedited removal. And so
they say the case is dismissed, the judge says it, and then ICE agents meet you at the door and arrest you?
It's even a little worse than that. You know, you think in the courtroom maybe this is good. People don't understand. What's happening. The person before Edgardo is a person named Zed who speaks Yoruba, but the only translator they had for him was in French. And the judge asked, do you understand what's happening? And of course he said no. So your case is dismissed, you're stripped of status, you walk out of the courtroom, you walk down the hallway, and then those masked ICE agents are waiting in the elevator lobby to grab you. And so what I had done with, you know, five families previously or individuals is just meet them either in the courtroom or just outside it and just try to escort them down the hallway into the elevator and out of the building. And five times previously, including once yesterday, my wife and I were able to do that. And this family that was worried they were going to get deported, they only have one more week, but at least they have a chance to come back to court and present their case. But then in this case, as I was asking to see the judicial warrant, they just grabbed him up.
But don't you have a police escort of security? So you have police versus ICE now?
The previous time, so, you know, being controller, I'm a citywide elected official. It comes with an NYPD detail. The previous times, the officer accompanied me and the, you know, whatever the family or individual that I was walking with, this couple, Maria and Manuel, a father named Camilo and his son, Brian. And I thought, great, here's the NYPD joining the controller to escort these asylum seekers out of the building to help them get due process and safety. In this case, obviously, that did not matter. And look, I think what's happening here. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, and Brad, it's been a while since we talked, but
I
wanted to ask you, you kept saying to the ICE agents, where's your judicial warrant? However, ICE is claiming that this was a public space and they didn't need a judicial warrant. What's your understanding?
I mean, I'll leave this for the lawyers. I am not an immigration lawyer. What people have been instructed to ask, and that, you know, is I need to see a judicial warrant. And we're trying to get good information to these families. What New York City should be doing is connecting people to lawyers and attorneys. And, you know, we've got a mayor here, Eric Adams, who sold New Yorkers out to Donald Trump and is failing to get people the information they need. We could be talking to immigrant families in the schools, in the shelters, in the public hospital system. Asking for a judicial warrant is a good idea for people to do. Having a lawyer is even better. And look, if they do proceed to charges here, I know I'll have one. Edgardo doesn't have one. Zed doesn't have one. Thousands of people just trying to seek asylum don't have lawyers or due process rights. And that is the tragedy right now.
And this trend now throughout the country of federal agents basically roughing up and detaining or arresting elected officials, Roz Baraka, the mayor of Newark, and a congresswoman in California, a U.S. Senator, Alex Padilla, and now this situation with you?
Yes, I mean, and Pam Bondi was very clear. They're trying to wreak havoc in cities. They say to liberate Democratic cities from their duly elected officials. This is part of what authoritarians do, strike fear into immigrant families and communities and try to undermine the rule of law and basic democracy by stoking conflict. And that is what they're doing. Our challenge is to find a way to stand up for the rule of law, for due process, for people's rights, and to do it in a way that is nonviolent and insistent, demands it, but also doesn't help them escalate conflict.
Let me ask you something. There was a rally as you were being held inside, and your wife, who's a lawyer, she also spoke. She wasn't taken like you were. Mayor Adams sent police to break up that rally. Did he ever support you? I mean, you had Zoran Mandani there speaking out. He's your competitor. He is running for mayor as well. You had Adrian Adams. Even Andrew Cuomo spoke out for you. Michael Blake. But what about the mayor?
Five mayoral candidates showed up, and I'm grateful to every one of them, including Zoran Mamdani, who I've cross-endorsed. Andrew Cuomo did not show up, but at least he issued a statement saying that my arrest was wrong. Eric Adams, who has sold this city out to Donald Trump to try to get his own pardon, let's be clear, like it's only himself he cares about, and he is putting New York's immigrants in harm's way. So no, he did not call me. He didn't do anything to help and issued a just rude statement.
I wanted to go to that co-endorsement because we want to get to ranked choice voting. It is not known to most people in this country what it is, but we're going to go to a clip right now of the two of you, Zoran Mamdani and Brad Lander, endorsing each other, what this means. You're both running for mayor.
We both love New York City.
And that's why it's so important to not send scandal-ridden, corrupt Andrew Cuomo to City Hall.
New Yorkers deserve so much better than a disgraced creep.
Agreed.
Zoran, you've done a remarkable job building a historic grassroots campaign for a New York City all New Yorkers can afford.
Brad, you've been a principled progressive leader in our city for years.
Early voting starts tomorrow, and we both know what we need to do to save our city from Andrew Cuomo.
You want to tell him?
You go first.
Yeah, you go first.
Let's do it together. We're cross-endorsing.
In New York City, we have ranked choice voting. That means you can rank up to five candidates for mayor.
Brad and I are officially telling our supporters.
Rank
your number one.
Rank Zoran number two. Let's send Andrew Cuomo
back to the suburbs.
So there you have a very confusing ad. You're both running for mayor. Explain ranked choice voting and what this means.
Ranked choice voting, instead of just getting one candidate, you can rank your preferences up to five. Here's my number one candidate, my number two candidate. So we're encouraging people, rank me number one, rank Zoran Mamdani number two. Don't rank Andrew Cuomo anywhere. And that way our votes would get combined, and whichever of us is ahead will face Andrew Cuomo with all of the combined votes. Most New Yorkers don't want him to be mayor, and ranked choice voting can help make sure that
in this last 20 seconds, New York for All Act, can you explain what it is, why you're supporting it?
New York City is a sanctuary city, but New York State needs to do more to protect immigrants, not to allow collaboration with ICE, and to provide more legal representation to people like Edgardo.
I want to thank you very much for being with us, Brad Lander, New York City Comptroller, Democratic mayoral candidate. ICE agents arrested him Tuesday for escorting a man out of his immigration hearing yesterday. That does it for our show. We have job openings, Senior Headline News Director, Director of Audience. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Noise of Carpet explores 1990s indie classics, recently exhumed underground gems. Every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, and 9 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Tune in if you're a slacker, loser, or creep for an hour of positively nostalgic triggers and some new stuff, too, on CJSF 90.1 FM or streaming at cjsf.ca.